Chapter 8. Emily awoke, slowly. She hadn't slept well. She'd spoken to Jade about Sergeant Miles, then made her way straight back to her rooms and gone to sleep. Jan had joined her sometime later, but she hadn't even been aware of him until morning. Her memories were a jumbled mess. She'd found herself dreaming of things she knew hadn't happened to her. They happened to Sergeant Miles, she thought as she sat up. They just feel real because I took them from his mind. She rubbed her eyes. Jade hadn't asked any questions, but from the look in his eyes, she feared it was because he was afraid of the answers. She had no doubt he would talk to Alassa about it, perhaps even Sienna or General Pollock. They'd demand answers unless they didn't want to look a gift horse in the mouth. Her lips twitched. Sergeant Miles had taught her she should always look a gift horse in the mouth. His horse is still at Red Rose, she told herself. We can reunite them when we step through the portals and raise the siege. Jan shifted against her, then sat up. Emily glanced at the clock to make sure they had time, then allowed him to kiss her. The kisses became something more, his hands slipping under her shirt and into her underwear. She leaned back, allowing him to undress her piece by piece. It felt strange to be making love when the world was at war, but it let her feel almost human. Her mind still felt as though it were stuffed with cotton wool. Afterwards, she headed for the shower and washed quickly before donning a simple blue dress. There was no point in wearing leathers, not until they were ready to begin the march south. People would talk if she wore anything other than a dress, their words perhaps reaching Void's ears. She made a mental note to suggest Nanette or someone remain behind, posing as her, after the army departed through the portal. Void might assume it wasn't a major offensive, as long as she wasn't accompanying the army. She rubbed her head, drying her hair with a spell. There was just no way to be sure they'd isolated all the spies. Alassa had locked down the entire castle and had the building searched thoroughly for chat parchments and other means of communication, but her men could have easily missed something. A spy who didn't know he was a spy. Emily shivered as she remembered just how many servants worked in the castle, from the queen's personal maids to the kitchen porters. If one of them was a spy, we'll just have to keep him guessing as long as possible, she thought. If nothing else, he'll hear so many rumors that he won't know what to believe. She stepped back into the bedroom, letting Jan have the shower. Her notes rested on the table where she'd dumped them. She felt a pang of regret as she picked up her old spellbook and flicked through the pages. Void had given it to her years ago, promising her that, as she advanced, she'd grow to understand the spells. She'd researched some of them, even used them. Others, the stranger spells, she'd never been able to comprehend, and she looked forward to studying them with him. That was before he started taking over the world, Emily thought. Now he wouldn't have the time to research spells, even if he wanted to. She pushed her feelings aside as she picked up a pen and started to sketch out more ideas and concepts. Void knew a lot of what she'd done over the years, but not all of it. She doubted he knew what had really happened at Resolution Castle. She crafted out a replacement mimic, then improved batteries. She thought, with a little effort, she could use a nexus point to fill them before taking them to the battlefield and using them to cast battle spells. Void might be surprised. Or he might have come up with the concept himself. He certainly knew what she'd done to take out a trio of necromancers and end the wars. And if I hadn't ended the wars, the necromancers might actually have won, she reminded herself dryly. We would have far worse problems. The thought mocked her. Their only edge was that no one had anticipated the end of the necromantic wars. Even Void had assumed his takeover would lead to a concentrated war against the necromancers, rather than a bid to reshape the Allied lands by himself. His preparations had been incomplete by the time he'd had to either launch his coup or back down and abandon the whole idea. She wished he'd stepped back from the brink. She'd been happy as his apprentice. She would have liked to continue indefinitely. Jan stepped back into the bedroom. Emily looked up and frowned. He looked downcast, as if something was wrong. Emily felt a chill run through her. They'd just made love. Jan wasn't the sort of person who would holler from the rooftops, who would shout his personal life, and hers, to the world. But a nasty thought occurred to her. Jan had been a prisoner in Whitehall before she'd freed him. Void could have done something to his mind and left it to fester, just in case.
Emily.
Jan sounded regretful.
We need to talk.
Do we? Emily tensed despite herself. Her magic washed through the room. As far as she could tell, Jan was in his right mind, although that might be meaningless. Void was subtle. He could insert all kinds of subliminal prompts into a victim's mind, nudges so tiny they were impossible to distinguish from their real thoughts. And once they took root, they were almost impossible to remove. "What would you like to talk about?" Jan swallowed, started to talk, and then started again. "Emily, I'm staying here." Emily blinked. "What?" "I'm staying here," Jan repeated. I can't go with the army. Emily took a breath. I don't expect you to fight. Jan's face twisted. Emily kicked herself mentally. She might as well have called him a coward, and Jan was no coward, to his face. He'd grown up in a culture where so much as hinting someone was a coward was a challenge to a fight, or worse. Fighting words, she reflected sourly. And yet she knew Jan wasn't a fighter like Jade or Kat or even Void. He was a student of magic who would have been happy spending the rest of his life in a research spell chamber, experimenting with newer and better spells. He'd never expected to find himself forced to betray, then abandon his master, let alone go on the run with his girlfriend and a handful of allies. Emily tried not to scowl. It wasn't easy.
"I don't belong here."
Jan waved a hand at the stone walls.
"I don't belong, not amongst the monarchs and sorcerers and everyone else. There's no place for me here."
Emily felt a hot flash of anger, mingled with grim understanding. She didn't feel as though she belonged either. Alassa might be happy running a kingdom, and Emeka might be content with her lot in life, but she wanted something different, something more. And yet, what choice did she have? Jan could slip into the shadows if he wished, set himself up in a small town and stay out of history. But she couldn't. Void would hunt her relentlessly. There was nowhere she could hide, not even on the far side of the craggy mountains, that he couldn't find her eventually. She didn't blame him for feeling as though he'd done his bit. She knew she'd be dead or captured without him. But she felt as though she were being abandoned. Again. She gritted her teeth. She would have taken it a little better, a little, if he hadn't made love to her a bare 10 minutes ago. She cleared her throat, placing firm controls on her magic. "Do you want to leave?" Jan hesitated.
I don't want to leave, but
I get it. Emily bit down on the urge to scream at him. "You want to stay in the rear and do your bit there, not come with me to the front." Jan shook his head.
"I can do magic and research for you here, but not—"
Emily understood. They'd started their relationship when they'd both been apprentice magicians. Their relationship had never been tested, not until Jan's master had tried to arrest her and her master had declared war on the Allied lands. She wondered idly if she could have been content if the war had never broken out. Jan had been stable, but she shook her head. Her relationship had always lacked a certain grand passion, or the more businesslike arrangements favored by mundane and magical aristocracy alike. "Kat would have stayed with you," her thoughts whispered treacherously. But a life on the run, fleeing from friends and enemies alike, would be the sort of life he wanted. "Really now," she said. "And do you think I would think less of you for not being—" She cut herself off. "Are you dumping me?" Jan hesitated. Emily shook her head. It didn't matter. Jan was saying goodbye to their relationship, if nothing else. She felt a surge of betrayal, mingled with a bitterness that surprised her. It wasn't as if he'd cheated on her, or agreed to a marriage with someone else, or— She shook her head, too despondent to care. It didn't matter. He'd made his choice and he could live with it, just like she'd have to. She cursed under her breath. It seemed she was doomed to relationships with men who loved one part of her, but disliked or even feared the rest. "Caleb couldn't cope with you putting the safety of the city ahead of his little sister," her thoughts reminded her. "And Kat couldn't handle you losing your powers." She told that part of her to shut up. "I get it. Really, I do. You can go back to the spell chamber and we'll work together for the rest of the war, but we won't be lovers any longer. Afterwards, you can find a new master to complete your education, or simply set up shop somewhere else. I'm sure you'll have no trouble finding a partner who'll compliment you." Jan flinched, as if she'd slapped him. "Emily, I get it," Emily repeated. She understood all too well.
He felt inadequate compared to everyone else on the Council of War. She understood. She shook her head. It didn't matter. She'd never asked him to be a match for Jade or Kat or General Pollock or anyone. She'd just wanted him to be himself. The door is over there. You can leave. Don't let it hit you as you go out. I'm sorry, Emily, Jan said. I really am. Emily pointed at the door. Jan scooped up his notes and walked through, closing the door behind him. Emily let herself sag the moment he was gone, sitting on the bed and closing her eyes as everything caught up with her. She wanted to lash out at him, to blast him to pieces with magic, or wrap her hands around his neck and squeeze. But she couldn't. She'd known he wasn't happy. But what else could she have done about it? I could have left him in Whitehall, she thought sourly. But that would have left him devoid. Her thoughts churned. Jan had spent his entire life in the civilized world. He'd grown up in a mundane family, then gone to Mountaintop. She made a private bet with herself that he hadn't been mistreated when he'd been a shadow. The older students might have the authority to treat their shadows like servants, but the smarter ones knew better than to abuse younger students who happened to be well-connected. Going on the run with her and her friends had been Jan's first exposure to how the other half lived. He hadn't enjoyed it. She opened her eyes, staring at her hands. She'd never been like Ameika, who'd had a new boyfriend every month, or Melissa, who'd fallen in love with a young man despite her family's disapproval, or Alassa, who'd approached her marriage as a business relationship and carefully selected a young man who'd respect her position and not try to undermine it. Emily had fallen for a friend, then for someone exciting who was also a friend, then for... She shook her head in irritation. It wouldn't be easy to find someone who truly understood her. The gulf between Jade and Alassa was tiny compared to the distance between her and anyone. She wasn't just from a different culture. She was from an entirely different world. Emily stood, pacing the room. Hers now, she supposed. Alassa hadn't said anything when Emily and Jan had moved in together. Emily wondered idly if the Queen thought the lockdown would keep word from spreading, or if she simply thought she had too many other problems to concern her. It wouldn't be wrong. The kingdom was under threat, armies trying to mass along the borders. Alassa might simply have decided that allowing them to share a room wasn't going to turn into a problem. We'll work together, as long as we're fighting the war, Emily promised herself. And afterwards, he can go do whatever he wants. She took a moment to center herself, calm herself, then turned to the window and peered over the city below. The courtyard was crammed with soldiers, small groups marching up and down, while others drilled with muskets, flintlocks, and cannons. The cannons looked bigger than she recalled, she noted. She guessed the designers had continued improving their work, even as war surged across the world. She hoped they hadn't accidentally sabotaged the war effort by constantly inventing better weapons instead of mass-producing the ones they had now. The early muskets had been so basic they could be put together in a blacksmith shop. As they grew more advanced, they required more and more skilled craftsmen to put them together. Luckily, we're also turning out more skilled craftsmen, she thought. The men below were just the tip of the iceberg, as far as the war effort was concerned. And we have to keep the craftsmen out of the war. She sighed as her eyes traveled into the distance. The army camp outside the city seemed to grow larger every time she looked at it. Alassa was mobilizing the largest army her country had ever seen, composed of men who'd volunteered rather than been press-ganged into the fight. Emily wondered, not for the first time, what would happen as military service became an honor rather than a death sentence. The craftsmen might want to fight, for fear they would be mocked as cowards, even as the war effort demanded they remain in the rear. She watched a line of men heading through the gates, marching down to the shooting range, and smiled grimly. The day when raw recruits were brutalized and loathed by everyone were long gone. They would never return. The necromancers might have had the edge in numbers, she reminded herself, but we have the edge in firepower. Her heart sank as she turned away. Void had had years to plan his coup. He'd certainly had more than enough time to raise and enhance an army. And given that he'd improved upon the enhancement process, she tried to calculate how many soldiers he could enhance, but drew a blank. How many lines was he prepared to cross? If he started bleeding students dry, he'd be able to enhance more soldiers in the short term while ensuring he couldn't enhance so many in the long. Of course, her thoughts reflected, he might have decided he had to win quickly or not at all. He didn't have that much time before his empire started to destabilize. He needed to complete his conquest and find an heir before it was too late. Perhaps he should try to kidnap Alassa instead, she mused. She might want to rule the known world. She shrugged, dismissing the thought. Void wouldn't want Alassa. He'd want someone with a far wider perspective, and that meant... who? A sorcerer who'd traveled the known world, a merchant who might understand how the world truly worked, or someone like Frida, who knew what it was like to be on the bottom of society. Or... she frowned. As far as she knew, Void had no one. It was why he'd been so intent on capturing her. He's experimenting with interdimensional travel, she thought. Perhaps he thinks he can recruit another outsider, someone who doesn't have any roots here. There was a tap on the door. Emily gathered herself, pasted a dispassionate expression on her face, and raised her voice. Come. A messenger stepped into the room, looking nervous. My lady, Her Majesty requests you join her for breakfast. Emily scowled, then tried not to feel guilty as the messenger flinched. Alassa had told her, more than once, that breakfast was her family's private time. She rarely invited even her closest friends to join her, knowing it would cause problems at court. Emily sighed as she stood, brushing down her dress. Someone had probably seen Jan leaving her room and reported it to the queen. The castle might be locked down, but rumors would still spread faster than light itself. Please inform Her Majesty that it will be my pleasure, she said firmly, and I will join her shortly. The messenger bowed. Yes, my lady. Chapter 9. She's a wonderful little girl, Emily said, as she held Princess Emily in her arms. Alassa's daughter was now 18 months old, wearing a white dress that struck Emily as too elaborate for a toddler, with no qualms about crawling across a dusty floor. Her blonde hair was the same shade as her mother's, her blue eyes a little brighter. Emily had never been particularly maternal, but looking at the toddler made her want to have a child of her own. And she's growing so quickly.
And she's learned to scream, Jade said ruefully. If she doesn't get what she wants, she screams.
She can't articulate what she wants yet, Alassa said. She held out her hands. Emily passed the child back to her, not without a twinge of regret. It's often a guessing game for us. Does she want some food or a drink or potty? Or is there something really wrong?
Emily nodded. How do you cope?
Alassa smiled, rather wryly.
Let's just say I'm starting to understand why my parents hired a number of nannies and governesses, she said. I spend as much time with her as I can, and it's still hard to determine what she really wants, even now. I can't wait until she's talking properly. It'll be so much easier when she can tell us what she wants.
I suppose it must be. Emily watched as Alassa placed the toddler in her seat, then sat next to her and picked up the bowl of food. Most queens and princesses would have given the job to a nanny, but not Alassa. She insisted on doing it herself, whenever she had the chance.
Are you planning to have another child?
I think it would be better to let Emily grow older first, so there's a gap between them, Alassa said.
But we're leaving it to luck.
Too much information, Emily said quickly. Really?
You did ask, Alassa teased. And as you know...
Her voice trailed off. Emily nodded. Alassa's ancestors had used magic to shape her bloodline, to enhance her powers and beauty, pushing the limits right to the edge of legality, perhaps beyond. And yet, the enhancements had come at a price. Alassa wasn't precisely barren. Princess Emily was proof she could have children. But it was hard for her to get pregnant. Perhaps it would be easier next time, Emily reflected. Alassa had had a duty to have a child as quickly as possible, someone who could take the throne when she died. The fear of failure had probably made it harder to conceive.
You don't have to talk about this at the breakfast table, Jade said. We don't have much time before the rigors of the day begin.
True, Alassa pointed to the tureens. Help yourself, please.
Emily nodded and opened the nearest tureen, then helped herself to some eggs and toast. The breakfast was very simple compared to the fancier lunches and dinners served in the dining halls below. But Alassa saw no need to set a big table when it was just her, her family, and her closest friends. Emily approved. There was no point in ordering the maids to lay out enough food for a small army when it was just going to be thrown out, or, more likely, served to the servants and their families. Alassa didn't have to make a show of her wealth and power here.
Jade met her eyes.
You'll be pleased to know the sergeant seems normal, he said. Although the healer did caution me that his magic is... He used the word cracked. What did you do to him?
Emily said nothing for a long moment. Jade would have discussed it with Alassa, who'd never been in the habit of letting sleeping dogs lie. She'd learned the hard way not to let things slide, even if they seemed harmless. A tiny problem, barely worth noticing, could easily turn into an absolute nightmare. And anything that happened in her castle was business.
I used a trick Void insisted I learn, Emily said finally.
She didn't want to go into details. Alassa wasn't supposed to know much of anything about soul magic, but Emily wouldn't have cared to bet against it. Jade would certainly know the basics, even if he'd never learned to use it. It was designed to help focus his mind.
Emily.
Jade didn't look away from her.
What does this trick involve?
His mind was slightly twisted by the raw magic he channeled back in the Blighted Lands, Emily said. Over the following months, the slight twist in his mind started to get more twisted, forcing him to expend more and more of his magic on keeping himself stable and sane. However, because his perception of his own mind was ever so slightly warped, he was... She found herself struggling for an analogy. Effectively trying to save and damn himself at the same time. My perception, my outside point of view, helped him fix the damage properly. She frowned inwardly. It was true enough. She just doubted they'd accept her word at face value. They'd known Sergeant Miles was going mad. They knew there'd be nothing anyone could do for him, unless someone thought outside the box. And now...
This trick could save a necromancer, Jade said.
Emily didn't like the way he said it.
Is it safe?
Emily picked her next words very carefully. Sergeant Miles is not a necromancer, she said firmly. He did channel a great deal of power, but nowhere near as much as a newborn necromancer. What I did wouldn't save a necromancer from himself, because the necromancer would already be too far gone to save. It just worked on someone who wanted to be saved, but just didn't know how to do it.
I hope you're right.
Alassa's face was carefully blank.
If you're wrong, he made me promise to kill him.
Emily didn't try to hide the pain she felt at her words.
And I will.
You might have to, Jade warned. Realistically, he needs to sit down, clear his mind, and rebuild his wards from scratch. Practically speaking, he's not going to have the time to do anything of the sort. He insists on accompanying you when you jump through the portal to Red Rose. If his magic leaks at the wrong time...
Emily nodded. It wasn't safe to bottle one's magic up indefinitely. The power would start to leak, either slopping into the surrounding area or, worse, stabbing deep into one's mind. It wouldn't be easy to convince the sergeant to keep his magic as low as possible, expending it before it started to bleed through his wards. They were on their way to war. The sergeant would need every last drop of power he had if he wanted to get his hands around Void's throat before he died. Emily knew the sergeant would be happy to die if he took Void with him.
I'll keep an eye on him, she said tiredly.
The memories, his memories, drifted in front of her eyes.
And if he does start to lose control again,
Jade nodded.
I don't want him dead, he said. I just don't want him hurting anyone else.
Alassa cleared her throat, signaling the subject was closed.
I noticed you ordered Jan out of your bedroom, she said. Should I arrange a new room for him?
Emily flushed. Of course a maid had noticed. Of course she'd alerted her mistress. Of course. She sighed inwardly. She thought the room was private, but someone with a quick mind could have seen Jan stalking out of the bedroom in a foul mood and put two and two together. Maids weren't stupid. She knew better than to believe otherwise, even for a moment.
Yes, please. Emily shook her head. We had a falling out.
And it would have landed a little better, her thought added, if we hadn't made love shortly before he dropped the bombshell.
I'm sorry to hear that, Jade said. Would you like me to beat him up for you?
No,
Emily scowled. She would have hated anyone making the offer back home, fearing their true motives. Here, she knew Jade meant well. It was almost worse.
We just discovered we were incompatible.
Alassa nodded.
You should probably pick someone else, then have a formal discussion with them before you commit yourself, she said. It isn't as if you're a random nobody.
It always struck me as absurd, Emily said. She hadn't been there for the start of Jade and Alas's courtship. In hindsight, it had taken her a long time to realize they were courting, and that it was serious enough for them to have a proper discussion about the future. I don't want to treat it as buying someone in the marketplace.
You probably should, Alasa said. You don't just point at a sweet apple and say you want to buy it. You pick it up and inspect it first, then decide if you want to buy it. A sweet red apple skin can hide a foul core, or worse.
It could be worse, Emily agreed. A couple of Ameka's boyfriends had turned out to be monsters in human form. And it really doesn't matter.
It does if you want children, Alasa said. And technically, you do need to find an heir for Cockatrice.
Emily nodded. Frida was her listed heir, but there were only 2 years between them. There was no reason to think Frida would outlive her for more than a handful of years. Although the morbid side of her mind pointed out, she was being hunted by the most powerful and capable sorcerer in recorded history. Frida might survive by dint of being unimportant in the grand scheme of things. She tried to remember if Void had ever so much as met Frida. If he had, it had only been for a few minutes. Frida had certainly never stayed at the tower. She smiled suddenly.
Wouldn't you rather redistribute the lands? They need stability, Alasa pointed out. And I don't need a reputation for screwing my friends.
That would be awkward, Jade agreed, a deadpan look on his face. Emily rolled her eyes. I'll worry about it later, after the war, she said. Did you hear from Kat? Nothing much, beyond the basics, Jade said. He's still holding his fortress on the far side of the mountains. The chaos in the Allied lands hasn't touched him yet, but he thinks it's only a matter of time. His people might start running short on food soon enough.
And they can't grow much for themselves, Emily said.
She shuddered. The Blighted Lands had been so drained that the population, such as it was, could barely scratch a living from the soil. They'd been dying, their numbers steadily decreasing, even though the smarter necromancers knew not to kill them all. The remaining settlements, free of the necromancers, were still struggling. All Void has to do is wait for them to starve.
I think so, Jade said. Kat can't muster much in the way of military power. The moment he steps outside his wards, he's toast.
Emily nodded, hoping Kat would have the sense to stay put. The young man she'd met, and dated for a few short months, had been the kind of person who would do anything on a dare, anything at all. He'd grown up a little since they'd split up, but she feared he hadn't grown up enough. Void could stand outside the wards and issue a challenge, and Kat might just accept, committing herself to a fight he couldn't win. He'd sooner die than have people think he was a coward. There's nothing cowardly in avoiding a fight you can't win, Emily told herself firmly. And we might be able to use him if he stays put. She leaned forward.
Will you be accompanying the army?
Of course, Jade said.
He glanced at Alasa.
There's no other choice. General Pollock may be in nominal command, but the Crown needs to send along a representative. That's me.
I wish I could go, Alasa said.
Her voice was deadly serious.
It would silence some of the doubters.
Emily winced inwardly. It was a double standard. No one would call Alasa a coward for remaining behind, but by the same token, they'd look down on her for not leading her troops into battle. She remembered King Randor's obsession with military glory, the princes she'd met who wanted to make a name for themselves on the battlefield. She cursed them under her breath. It just wasn't fair. Alasa had proved she could fight and win a civil war. She didn't have to put herself at risk just to keep some bird-brained nobleman from looking down his nose at her. It was bad enough that half of them expected Jade to be the power behind the throne.
War is changing, she said softly. The days of kings and princes leading their armies into battle are coming to an end.
Prince Dator might feel otherwise, Alasa pointed out. He led his army against the necromancers.
Emily had to smile, then sobered. He also lost his country because he and his family refused to accept the world had changed, she said. He might be King Dator now, but he's little more than a prince consort.
I suppose it depends on how much power his new wife is prepared to grant him, Alasa said slowly. I only met Mariah once. She was a spoiled brat.
Gosh, Jade said.
He grinned mischievously.
I can't imagine who that reminds me of.
Alasa kicked him under the table.
I grew up, she said. Perhaps Mariah grew up too.
She didn't seem quite such a brat when I met her, Emily said.
Whitehall did wonders for you. Perhaps it did them for her, too.
Perhaps.
Melissa let out a long breath.
It won't make life any easier, not for me.
War is changing, as I said, Emily told her. And kings and princes who lead their men into battle are unlikely to survive long enough to marry and have children.
How charming,
Melissa smiled humorously.
Let us hope the changes sink in before someone decides to do something stupid. I had to squash a plot a year ago to provoke an incident on the border, apparently in the hopes I'd be unable to cope with the ensuing conflict and a council of noblemen would be able to take my place.
Bastards, Jade said. There's no way they'd have gotten away with it.
It would still have been a blot on my authority.
Melissa took her daughter out of her chair and dandled the toddler on her knee.
And it might have been impossible to counter before it was too late.
She looked at Emily.
You know you're my daughter's guardian.
Emily shivered. Do you expect something to happen to you? And Jade? Melissa grimaced.
Jade would find it difficult to rule as regent, she said. Even now, there are too many noblemen who would seek to depose him, on the grounds he isn't of royal blood. He does hold lands, but they're technically from his marriage, and therefore could be taken away when I die. You're a landed baroness, perhaps the third most powerful person in the kingdom, certainly the most terrifying. If you were regent—
If you don't want the post, I'll take Emily and run, Jade said. I'm not going to leave her sitting on a throne, a puppet of everyone around her.
I understand, Emily said. And if something happens to you, or to both of you, I will do what I can for your daughter.
She met Alassa's eyes. Do you think something is going to happen?
My father spent most of his life warding off plots against his life, Alassa said. My grandfather spent his reign recovering the power my great-grandfather lost to the nobility. No easy task, not when so many of them wanted to keep it. Right now, most of the older players are dead or in exile or simply broken. But that means there's a newer generation of noblemen who yearn for their lost power or fear the rise of the commoners. It just takes one idiot to start something they can't stop.
Her eyes darkened.
And they would love the idea of a toddler on the throne, someone who couldn't hope to rule in her own right. Emily is going to need a powerful protector who can't be easily pushed aside and won't seek to take power for herself, a combination that will be difficult to find. I don't expect anything to happen to me, Emily, but I can't rule it out either.
Emily nodded slowly. It was the last thing she wanted. Alassa and Jade were her friends, and anything that happened to them might consume some of her other friends, too. But she knew it was wise to plan for the future. Alassa's first responsibility was to ensure her kingdom had an heir, so her people knew her dynasty would endure. Emily wondered, idly, what her people would say if her second child was a boy. They'd try to insist he take precedence over his older sister.
If I have to, I will, she said. But I hope I never do.
Good.
Jade made a face.
Nanette wants to see you after breakfast, by the way. Watch your back.
We have enemies in common, Emily reminded him. She's not going to put a knife in me now.
We shall see, Jade said. After that, come find me. We have preparations to make.
Emily nodded. Understood, she said. Will we be ready to go on time?
I think so, Jade said. But as far as any listening ears are concerned, we won't be ready to leave for another 2 weeks.
Chapter 10.
Nanette wasn't precisely in prison, any more than Sergeant Miles had been held in a dungeon. But her chambers, Emily reflected, were designed to keep her under close supervision. Emily doubted Nanette had been fooled for more than a second. The lack of windows, a private washroom, and furniture that was bolted to the floor made it clear the room was designed for unwelcome guests. The guard standing outside in heavy armor was just the icing on the cake. He stepped aside as Emily approached, allowing her to open the door and look inside. A flash of alarm shot through her as she realized Nanette was nowhere to be seen. She raised a ward, then stepped into the room and reached out with her senses. The room had been carefully designed to admit no hiding places, certainly not for a grown adult. Emily braced herself, half expecting Nanette to be hiding behind the door or behind an invisibility spell, or... Her mind raced. Nanette was powerful. She could have turned herself into something, then settled down to wait for the room to be abandoned before turning herself back and making her escape. Emily had done it herself a couple of times. She dared not assume Nanette couldn't do the same. A thought struck her,
and she spun around. The guard was close, too close. No guard would dare step so close to a noblewoman, not when a word from her would be enough to send him to the chopping block. His eyes had been lingering on her behind. Emily scowled as she saw through the disguise. The hair was concealed under a cap, large enough to hide much of her face, and the breastplate concealed her breasts nicely.
Nanette, Emily growled. What did you do to the guard?
Nanette removed the cap, allowing her hair to spill down.
What do you think I did to him?
Tell me, Emily said.
Nanette was clever. She could have seduced the guard, gotten her fingers under his armor, and turned him into a frog. Or simply put him in a trance, forced him to undress, and donned his armor herself.
What did you do?
I convinced him his relief had arrived and sent him away, Nanette said. That's the problem with guards, even the ones here. They're not paid to think. Once you get a bunch of orders circulating through the command structure, they'll follow them mindlessly for fear of what'll happen if they don't. I got a handful of guards circling around, and none of them thought it was odd when I wound up here. Fun, don't you think?
I think you're on the verge of being chained up and left to rot, Emily snarled. Do you know how hard it was to convince Elassa to let you have some freedom, rather than handing you over to the royal torturers? Nanette shrugged.
I get bored easily, she said. I wanted something to do.
You pretended to be my maid for over a year, Emily reminded her. And you didn't break character, not once. I only uncovered you by sheer dumb luck.
It was a challenge, Nanette said. You were harder to fool than many others.
Thanks, Emily said sourly. You still fooled me.
Nanette strode into the room, closed the door, and started to undress.
This spare uniform really needs a wash, she said. Do you think the maids would clean it before the owner wants it back?
I haven't the slightest idea, Emily said.
She didn't turn her back.
How did you even get it?
Cunning.
Nanette winked and struck a dramatic pose.
Do you like what you see?
Emily scowled. Nanette didn't seem troubled by her own nakedness. Her skin was pale, with faint marks on her feet that suggested she'd been born a commoner. Her breasts were small, something Emily suspected made it easier to pass as a man. Her hair gave the impression of being long, yet it was cut in a manner that made it easier for her to hide it or simply cut it shorter. Emily forced herself to keep an eye on Nanette as she strode over to the bed, scooped up a simple dress, and pulled it over her head. All of a sudden, she looked like a maid.
The guards might have been wiser if they'd taken away my clothes, Nanette commented dryly. It never occurred to them I could simply turn my dress inside out.
You looked like a maid, Emily realized. When the guard swapped shifts, you popped out and claimed you'd been changing the sheets.
Something like that, Nanette said. The trick to convincing people to believe in you, or in the image you're trying to present, is to let them see what they want to. The guard saw someone young, female, and apparently defenseless, and let me through without so much as checking to make sure the dangerous prisoner was still in her cell. You should probably mention their blind spot to the queen.
Or to Jade, Emily said.
Jade wouldn't take it lightly. Nanette could have walked up behind Elassa and slit her throat, or simply escaped the castle, and no one would have known she was gone until it was too late. Do you expect them to trust you now?
No, for the very simple reason they won't, ever.
Nanette made a show of examining her fingernails.
As far as your friends are concerned, I'm the bitch who ruined their wedding and nearly killed her. They are not going to forgive me for that, even if they need me. I'm about as welcome here as a dose of the clap.
She grinned suddenly.
Speaking of which, have you heard the latest rumors?
No.
Emily leaned against the wall, trying to relax.
Do I want to?
Apparently you threw your husband out of your room for not meeting your sexual demands, Nanette said. That's one story anyway. Another insists he tried to rape you. A third suggests,
I don't want to know.
Emily felt her magic spike. She had to force herself to calm down.
How many of these stories did you spread?
None of them, Nanette said.
I just listened.
Emily ground her teeth. And none of them are even remotely true, she growled. Why do people spread them? Nanette gave her an odd look.
Imagine you're a maid, here in this castle. You are completely at your mistress's mercy. You can be slapped or smacked or beaten halfway to death at any moment, when your mistress is in a bad mood. You can be harassed or groped or raped by everyone from your mistress's husband and children to the guards and manservants, and none of them will face any punishment if they do. And there is nothing you can do about it. Would you not secretly enjoy such stories about your betters? Would you not elaborate on them, to allow the stories to grow in the telling, as a petty form of revenge?
I didn't mistreat any of the maids, Emily pointed out.
Clearly, I should have slapped you a few times. Why do you think they care?
Nanette shrugged, choosing not to respond to Emily's jibe.
As far as they're concerned, you're just another noblewoman. You can do whatever you like to them, and they know it. Sure, you can tell yourself you wouldn't, but why would they believe you?
Point, Emily conceded. She cocked her head thoughtfully. That's how you do it, isn't it? You study people, you determine how they think, and you weave it into your own personality.
It works, as long as you don't break character, Nanette said. But you already know that, don't you?
Yes. Emily took a breath. You wanted to see me?
I wanted to show off, Nanette said. I was getting bored.
So you said, Emily told her.
I have a pair of jobs for you.
Nanette grinned.
And how many of them involve posing as the girl who eats the dung?
Emily made a face, but decided not to rise to the bait.
First, we're leaving shortly, as you know. I certainly do now, Nanette said. Half the rumors think the army will be dispatched in a week. The other half think Her Majesty is trying to sell out for the best terms she can get.
First, when we leave, I want you to pose as me long enough to convince any watching spies I haven't gone with the army, Emily said. Be me, discuss spellware with Jan, devise machines and weapons of war with the craftsmen. Be nice to the servants.
Nanette smiled. You do realize he is unlikely to be fooled for long.
Every little bit helps, Emily told her. Second, I want you to take some of the gems and something charmed with my magic and teleport around the Allied lands. Spread rumors about me being everywhere, assisting rebels and supporting our allies and everything else. Tell the world I'm looking for lost artifacts, the One Ring, the Deathly Hallows, the Bands of Mourning, a whole bunch of others that will turn the tide of the war in our favor. Tell them whatever you like, as long as it keeps him guessing.
He'll send his troops after you, Nanette said. After me, rather. Is that what you want?
Yes, Emily said. Don't get caught.
I will certainly try, Nanette grinned mischievously. And then what?
You join us when we try to break into Whitehall, Emily said. I think I have a plan for teleporting into the school. You can tell people I'm planning to do that, too.
Nanette frowned.
It was hard to tell, Emily reflected sourly, if Nanette believed her. It was a tall story, even though Emily had successfully teleported out of Whitehall. The important thing was that Void would believe it, if, when, the story reached his ears. He knew how closely she was linked to Whitehall. She'd been there when the school had been founded, and he'd fear she could get into Whitehall. She wondered idly if Nanette would do as she was told. She might just decide that rumor was too dangerous to spread.
As you wish. Nanette stood and looked Emily up and down. I'll need supplies, of course.
Of course, Emily said.
And do I have to sleep with Jan? Nanette snickered. It would make the pretense a great deal more convincing.
No, it wouldn't. Emily bit down a sharper answer before it led to an argument. Do you really think that would work?
I told you, Nanette shrugged. People believe what they want to believe. People expect to see whatever they expect to see. And if I get it mostly right, they'll overlook the rest.
Sleeping with Jan would be wrong, Emily said. She felt a twinge of sympathy.
Did you sleep with someone under orders?
Nanette nodded.
There were times, plus times when I couldn't avoid it without being exposed. It was never easy.
Emily shook her head in disbelief. How did you cope?
Easy.
Nanette's face changed, moving through a dizzying series of emotions. None of them, Emily realized, even remotely real.
The people I fooled? They weren't just fooled by me. They fooled themselves, because even the smartest of people can be fooled by their own preconceptions. I fooled them not because I was smarter or more capable, but because I leveraged their own weaknesses against them. I could never afford to let myself relax, to let my own preconceptions get the better of me, but I could enjoy making fools of them, and sometimes watching as they made fools of themselves. Does that answer your question?
You liked the challenge, Emily said flatly.
Yes, Nanette shrugged. Some parts were less pleasant than others, but even the unpleasant parts ended with me celebrating another victory and my target mourning what he'd lost.
She looked oddly pensive.
I suppose I have something in common with the gossiping maids and babbling guards, she added. I like tricking the fools who think themselves superior to me.
Emily shrugged. Write a list of what you need, within reason, she said. I'll see you get it.
You can make your preparations here while we get ready. Until then, stay here and don't disturb the guards or Alassa will put you in the dungeons, and I didn't manage to get out of them.
You're not me, Nanette said mildly.
No, Emily agreed, and Alassa isn't me either.
She turned and left the room, her back prickling as she stepped through the door. She knew Nanette wanted revenge, but Emily didn't trust her any further. They were allies, not friends, and Nanette was playing games with the guards. She sighed, wondering if the older girl was a demented thrill-seeker, the kind of person who'd push the limits as far as they would go. It was unwise to provoke a queen who had every reason to hate her, but Nanette might live for the thrill. A guard appeared.
My lady?
Emily eyed him narrowly, then sighed. Stay on guard outside the door, and do not open it under any circumstances, she ordered. I'll speak to the prince consort and arrange for someone to relieve you.
Yes, my lady.
Good. Emily met his eyes. Do not, like I said, open the door. She strode off, hurrying back through the corridors to Jade's office. He was the commander of the palace guard, a position that had been purely nominal before Alassa had become the ruling queen. His office bustled with officers, many promoted from the ranks, coming in to be assigned to new roles within the army before they were set out again. Jade had done his work well, Emily reflected. He'd taken what little she'd been able to tell him about staff work back on Earth and create a whole new military structure. She just hoped he'd be able to convince his titled subordinates to listen to the staff officers.
Emily.
Jade dismissed the rest of the officers with a wave.
What did she say?
Quite a bit. Emily briefly outlined what had happened. You need to double the guard on her door, perhaps even triple it.
I'll see to it.
Jade made a note on a piece of paper.
It might be safer to chain her to the wall, or force her to drink potion or something.
Only in the short term, Emily said. We don't want her turning against us.
She's pushing the limits, Jade muttered.
He cleared his throat.
Why do I have the feeling I'm clutching a death viper to my chest?
We have goals in common, Emily said bluntly, rubbing her fingers against the bracelet on her wrist. As long as she thinks she can accomplish her goals by working with us, she'll stay. If she starts thinking we might kill her at any moment, she might just walk away. I doubt that cell will hold her if she really wants out.
Probably not, no.
Jade looked up at her.
I'd be a great deal happier if she was somewhere else.
We need her for the moment, Emily said. After that, she can go. She leaned forward. I understand there was something you wanted to discuss.
Yes.
Jade reached for a map and laid it out on the table.
You recognize this?
Emily frowned. Rosalinda City?
Yeah.
Jade drew a circle around the edge of the city.
The besieging armies, as of last report, have been holding the line here. They've tried to get over the walls or into the castle itself, but they were repulsed twice. The reports suggest none of the enhanced troops were involved in either attempt.
That's probably for the best, Emily said. She'd seen what the enhanced troops could do. They could be over the walls and slashing through the defenders before their targets had a chance to react. What do you want to do?
I've been discussing the matter with Sergeant Miles and General Pollock, Jade said. We can project a portal there, no problem. Possibly more than one, as long as Void doesn't try to jam them. He might be able to, as you know.
He did it before, Emily said. But that might have been because of what he did to the Nexus point there. Jade nodded.
I need to send an advance party, he said.
He reached for a second map.
If we set up more crystals, we can stabilize the portal long enough to bring in much of the army, but doing so will set off all kinds of alarms. The advance party needs to cause enough of a diversion to keep the attackers busy, to give the rest of the army time. Sergeant Miles has volunteered for the mission. I want you to accompany him.
Emily nodded shortly. Her mouth was suddenly very dry. She didn't like the idea of going back into danger, particularly as part of a glorified diversion. It was going to be hard to hide her involvement. She shook her head. They'd just have to claim she'd jumped in, caused havoc, and then jumped out again. It would suffice. She hoped it would.
You're the only person he might listen to, Jade said. Don't let him get himself killed. We need him to show us the way inside.
I understand. Emily took a breath. She would have preferred to leave the sergeant behind, in safety, but he would never have stood for it. I won't let you down.
Good.
Jade glanced at the clock.
Make sure you go to bed early tonight. I want to insert you tomorrow, so you have time to scout before activating the crystals. Keep an eye on the sergeant, and don't let him do anything stupid.
I'll do my best, Emily promised. And keep an eye on Nanette for me.
I will, Jade said. And I hope you're not making a terrible mistake.
Chapter 11.
The spells should work, Jan said as he tapped the teleport gem. When they're triggered, they should place you in the correct location.
Close enough to the city to be within walking distance, far away enough to be reasonably sure we won't be spotted, Sergeant Miles said, shooting Jan a dirty look. Be very sure.
Jan flushed angrily.
The spells are as perfect as we can make them. The coordinates are the ones you selected. But we're going to be jumping the pair of you closer to Whitehall than ever before, perhaps close enough for him to redirect or simply jam the teleport. We've minimized the risks as best as we can, but there is no way to remove them completely.
As you know, Emily thought tiredly, the unspoken words hung in the air. Or you certainly should know. She cleared her throat.
We have everything we should need, she said. Is the army ready to move?
The advance elements are ready, Jade told her. I'll be leading them through the portal myself. The remaining units will be prepped and deployed as soon as we've secured the other side of the portal. We've done all we can to prepare them without giving away our plans.
He didn't sound pleased. They'd gone over the plan time and time again, trying to decide precisely when they should tell the men the offensive was about to begin. Sergeant Miles had argued for telling them immediately, so they knew it was real. But Jade and General Pollock had overruled him, pointing out the dangers of alerting spies within the camp. Emily had suggested telling the men they were going to march to the border instead, as a compromise, but she had to admit it was unlikely Void would take the bait. The border was impossible to defend. He'd know they were up to something else, even if he didn't know what.
We'll go now, Emily said. There was no point in further delay. They'd done everything in their power to guarantee success.
Sergeant?
Sergeant Miles, just for a moment, didn't seem to hear her. Emily eyed him, worriedly. He looked normal, yet there was just something ever so slightly wrong. She would have wondered if he was drunk, if she hadn't known he was under constant observation. He moved like a man who had to keep very tight control of himself, for fear of collapse. She hoped, prayed, he could remain upright long enough to complete the mission. I could go alone, she thought. She'd considered taking someone else, but everyone qualified to complete the mission was needed elsewhere. Sergeant Miles would have been needed too, if Jade hadn't been worried about his sanity. Or we could delay matters for a few days longer.
I'm ready.
Sergeant Miles looked at Jade, then picked up the bag and hefted it over his shoulders.
Be ready. I want you and the troops in place the moment we send the signal.
Emily nodded, then took the sergeant's hand and triggered the teleport spell. The world went white, then black. They fell a handful of inches to the ground. The sergeant yanked his hand free and spun around, drawing a wand with one hand and his sword with the other. Emily ducked, getting as close to the ground as she could. There'd been no way to be sure of what they'd encounter on the far side. They might easily have materialized in the middle of the enemy army. She muttered a night vision spell, then looked around. They were in the middle of a muddy field, one that, in happier times, might have grown corn or potatoes or something else to keep the kingdom fed. Now the fields had been stripped of everything even remotely edible, and the remnants trampled into the muddy ground. Emily guessed the tide of refugees from Alluvia and Southern Red Rose had passed through like a herd of locusts before being dispersed by one or more of the warring armies. The stench of too many humans and too close of a proximity still hung in the air.
Clear. Sergeant Miles muttered. We are alone.
Emily stood slowly. There was a faint light to the north, almost certainly the city, but the remainder of the countryside was wrapped in darkness. If there was anyone nearby, they were keeping their heads down and trying not to be noticed. She looked towards the distant tree line and shuddered. The forest was deep and dark enough to hide an entire army of runaway peasants, if they didn't mind being declared outlaws. Emily hoped the locals had been able to run before the army swept over them. The men would have been press-ganged if they'd been caught, the women and children raped and murdered. She shuddered again. Void had unleashed forces he couldn't control.
That's not fair, she told herself. Armies were hated and feared a long time before one war ended and another began.
Sergeant Miles placed his bag on the ground.
Get the crystals into position, he ordered curtly. I'll sweep the edge of the field.
Emily nodded, then knelt by the bag and opened it. She'd practiced putting the crystals together time and time again, but her hands still felt sweaty as she placed them on the ground and nudged them into the right formation. Magic, a faint flicker of magic, darted through the air. She braced herself, half expecting Void's troops to teleport right on top of her, but nothing happened. Her lips twitched. Using her magic to set off false alarms all over the continent had clearly made him think better of sending his men to each and every alarm.
Which suggests he doesn't have anything like enough enhanced soldiers under his command, she mused. We might just be able to reach Whitehall without being stopped.
She put the last of the crystals into place, then rested her fingers against the prime spellstone to test the magic. It was twinned with its counterpart back in Zangaria, but she breathed a sigh of relief as she confirmed the link between the two was still intact. They could open the portal at any moment. She straightened, scribbled a hasty note on a piece of chat parchment, and looked around. Sergeant Miles was walking back towards her, his face grim. He moved so quietly she wouldn't have had the slightest idea he was there if she hadn't seen him.
Come and look at this, he said quietly. Quickly.
Emily cast a spell to hide the crystal lattice from prying eyes, then followed him to the edge of the field. The ground was scorched and blackened, littered with pieces of charred wood and stone. A farmhouse, she realized dully. A farmhouse that had been destroyed so completely it was utterly beyond repair. She felt her heart sink as she realized there were no bodies lying on the ground, no sign the farmer and his family had ever lived at all. She hoped they'd escaped before the army arrived. The troops had burned their farm to the ground. They wouldn't have shown mercy to the farmer and his family. Her heart twisted. This close to the city, the farmers would be largely free men. They'd enjoy a certain degree of independence, perhaps even effective freedom. The local aristocrats couldn't treat them as slaves, for fear they'd simply run off and vanish within the city's teeming population. She wondered grimly if one of the rebel armies was commanded by an aristocrat who wanted to grind the freedom under his boot, or if the farm had simply been destroyed in passing. There was no way to know.
There's no sign of a fight, Sergeant Miles said. I think the farmers got away.
I hope so, Emily said. She checked her watch. We have 5 hours until dawn.
Sergeant Miles nodded.
Come on, he said. We'll check the enemy camp.
Emily smiled, then cast a handful of obscurification charms around herself as they began to walk. A smart commander would be sure to picket all the approaches, stationing horsemen and sentries along all the possible angles of approach. There was little hope of an army arriving to lift the siege, as far as they knew, but she knew better than to assume the enemy wouldn't take basic precautions. The charms would make her extremely difficult to see, as long as she didn't make her presence obvious or accidentally snap a ward line. A competent commander would put them in place, too. The wind shifted, blowing towards them. She took a breath, bile rising in her mouth at the scent of piss and shit and all the other smells of an unkempt army camp. General Pollock would have pitched a fit if his men hadn't bothered to observe basic hygiene while setting up and manning a camp. The prospect of catching something nasty should have focused a few minds. She guessed the enemy commanders didn't care about their men, or assumed, for whatever reason, that the siege would be over quickly. They might be right. The city sat on the shores of a lake, but there was no way the population could bring in enough food to sustain themselves for long. It was just a matter of time before the starving and desperate citizens threw open the gates and begged for mercy, even if they knew the army would loot, rape, and burn its way through the streets. A smart commander would keep his men under control long enough to secure the city, then let the troops run riot. They passed through the remnants of a hamlet, destroyed so thoroughly that, in a year or two, there would be no trace it had ever existed, and made their way down the King's Road leading to the city. The stench grew stronger. She wanted to use a spell to shield her nostrils, but didn't dare. A light caught her eye and she froze, staring down the road. A man stood there, smoking a pipe. He didn't look very alert. Sergeant Miles held up a hand, making a signal. There'd be more than one. Emily nodded curtly and peered into the darkness. A second man was leaning against a tree, fast asleep. She winced, despite herself. The poor man would be beaten half to death by his commander if he wasn't hanged on the spot, if he was caught. She guessed he and the smoker had a quiet agreement. As long as one of them was awake, the other could have a nap. If they were lucky, the smoker would be paying more attention to the city rather than the approach roads. Sergeant Miles had had a habit of sneaking up on sentries just to test their alertness, and she dared not assume the enemy sergeants would be any different. She waited as Sergeant Miles glided forward, flitting from tree to tree. The sentry didn't see him coming until it was far too late. Sergeant Miles came up on him and buried a charmed knife in his throat, killing him before he had a chance to make a sound. Emily gritted her teeth as the sleeper awoke. Too late. Sergeant Miles killed him too. She knew there'd been no choice, no time to risk trying a spell, but it still rankled. The poor bastards probably hadn't wanted to join the army. Putting the thought aside, she crawled forward. The men wore very simple outfits, their shoulders emblazoned with their lord's colors. Different lords, she noted with a flicker of amusement. She recalled Queen Mariah telling her that a number of her noblemen had banded together against her, gathering their armies to lay siege to the city. Void might have pushed them into an alliance, but it didn't look as if he'd managed to solve years of antagonism. They clearly didn't trust their fellows to guard their backs. And yet their sentries managed to come to an agreement, she thought. She wished she'd had a chance to interrogate them, to learn what was going on in the enemy camps. Perhaps the agreement isn't as fragile as we might like. She searched the men, finding nothing beyond a handful of older weapons and pouches of coins. It didn't look as if they trusted their superiors not to rob them, and then inched through the remaining trees. The southern side of the city had been deliberately left unsettled, providing room for aristocratic entertainments like horse riding and jousting. Now it was covered with enemy tents and trenches. They'd pushed the lines as close to the city and the castle as they could, leaving very little space between the walls and the wards and the entrenchments. Siege engines were clearly visible within the gloom, being readied for an attack on the city. She couldn't see any cannon, but she would be astonished if there were none. The days when the aristocracy could dismiss firearms as children's toys were long gone. The wind shifted again. The stench grew stronger. Emily spied a handful of makeshift latrines, little more than trenches at the edge of the camp. But it didn't look as if they were being used properly. She grimaced as the scent of overcooked fish wafted through the air. The soldiers were probably fishing in the lake, catching so many fish there was a very real chance they'd deplete the fish population beyond recovery. They were probably hunting in the king's forest, too hungry or desperate to care about the law. She wouldn't have cared to be the aristocrat who tried to tell her men they couldn't. She reached out gingerly with her senses. The camp was surrounded by wards, very basic wards. The cluster of tents had heavier protections. The aristocrats and their magicians probably slept there, but nothing that would stand up to her. Void hadn't bothered to suggest they take more precautions, probably because it would suit him, in the long term, if the aristocratic armies took a beating. And yet, Sergeant Miles joined her.
"There's a lot of men crammed into that camp," he whispered shortly. "And it isn't the only one."
Emily nodded, pulling back her senses as the sergeant outlined what he'd seen. There were three more camps just like it, positioned so close to the city they couldn't possibly be ignored. The aristocrats must be convinced they wouldn't be attacked, not now. They'd stripped their cadre of trained men bare just to lay siege to the city. Emily smiled, rather coldly, as they began to make their way around the city, silently noting and logging the enemy position. If they won the coming fight, Queen Mariah and her husband would have little trouble asserting authority over the remnants of the aristocracy. There'd be no way the survivors could build a new army in time. "And she'll have to worry about her people instead," Emily mused. "The levelers won't let her have absolute power, not without a fight." She felt tired and grimy as they kept moving, slipping past sentries who clearly weren't taking their duties too seriously. They were nothing more than a tripwire, and yet she shuddered as she saw a handful of men dangling from trees, the ropes carefully positioned to ensure the hanged men took a long time to die. Rebels? Traitors? People who'd tried to flee the city? Or simply locals strung up to give the men something to do? She was too far from the dangling men to tell. They could have been anyone or anything.
"We could sneak a little closer," Sergeant Miles suggested. "Or set up a trap."
Emily shook her head. they didn't need to get any closer. She touched the teleport gem in her pocket as they returned to their first vantage point. The dead men hadn't been touched, programming in a new set of coordinates. Someone screamed in the night. Her stomach churned, even though the sound had come from the camp rather than the city. The population knew it was just a matter of time until the walls broke, or disease started to spread, or they starved. Despair hung in the air. The end could not be long delayed. "Yes, it can," she told herself. "We're coming." They inched away from the city, not relaxing until they were halfway back to the destroyed farm and the crystal lattice. Emily sucked in her breath, breathing a sigh of relief when she saw the lattice was undisturbed. She'd concealed it, but any passing sorcerer would have known something was up if he'd sensed the spell. Or someone could simply have stumbled across it. She'd seen refugees trying to dig up roots and unripe crops in a desperate bid to remain alive a few more days. Someone who'd tried to tear the farm apart could easily have stumbled across the crystals and destroyed them. Sergeant Miles looked pensive as he dug into his bag.
"Time."
Emily checked her watch. "We have 20 minutes until the deadline," she said. "We can wait."
"Good."
Sergeant Miles took a long breath.
"I told you Jan wouldn't last."
Emily flushed angrily. Sergeant Miles had never bothered to hide his disdain for Jan. The charm's apprentice just wasn't a soldier, wasn't used to putting his life at risk time and time again. Sergeant Miles simply couldn't respect him as a person, and yet, is this really the time?
"Just keep an eye on him," Sergeant Miles observed. "People can do dumb things when they think they're being disrespected."
Emily scowled at him. "Perhaps you should stop disrespecting him." Sergeant Miles smiled, despite her tone.
"I'm too old a dog to learn new tricks," he said quietly. "The world is changing. Despite everything they," he waved a hand towards the enemy camps, lost in the gloom, "can do. And it might not have a place for me any longer."
"You'll always have a place with me," Emily said.
"We shall see," Sergeant Miles said.
The first hint of dawn flickered over the distant mountains.
"It's time."
Chapter 12. "Cover me," Emily said. She touched the crystal, triggering the spells. "Here we go." The crystals lit up. A flare of light flashed through the air, the darkness itself seeming to boil as the world was twisted into a spinning vortex. Emily stepped back hastily, her skin prickling as the magic grew and grew. The enemy sorcerers would have sensed it the moment the magic surged. She might as well have set fire to a small pile of magnesium. The flare was so bright it was almost blinding. There was no way in hell they could possibly have missed it. "Which means they're already rousing the camp," she thought, as the light collapsed into a single glowing square. The portal was twisting oddly, as if it were a bubble caught in the wind. "They'll be on us within minutes." She smiled as the first horseman cantered out of the portal, galloping past them and heading for the edge of the field. They'd set up tripwires of their own, establishing pickets as the rest of the army came through and started to deploy. Their carbines were supposed to be more accurate than the infantry muskets. The bar wasn't set very high. And they could give enemy cavalry a nasty fright when they tried to charge the portal. More horsemen followed, spreading out rapidly. Emily allowed herself a moment of relief as Jade and Sienna stepped out of the portal, followed by row upon row of musket men. The latter hurried to the edge of the field, half digging trenches, while the remainder stood on guard. They didn't have much time before the enemy infantry arrived. Jade shot her a salute, then looked at Sergeant Miles.
"Report. 4 camps, probably somewhere between 10,000 and 20,000 men," Sergeant Miles told him. "No firearms spotted, but we didn't slip into the camp itself."
Jade nodded curtly. He'd known there wouldn't be exact figures. The reports from the city insisted there were millions of men laying siege to the walls, even though it was unlikely that the aristocrats could raise more than 100,000 at most. An experienced man could look at the camp and estimate how many men it held, but there was no way to be sure. A skilled commander might have set up his camp to deceive watching eyes.
"Emily," Jade said, "are you ready?"
Emily opened her bag and removed the valve and battery. "I'm ready."
"Go now," Jade ordered.
Behind him, the portal shimmered.
"I think we're running out of time."
"Understood," Emily said. Void was trying to jam the portal in hopes of cutting the army off from its supplies. The men were still flowing through, but there were limits to how much they could carry on their backs. Sergeant? Sergeant Miles grabbed her arm. Emily grasped the teleport gem, then closed her eyes and triggered the spell. The world heaved around them as they jumped, her eyes snapping open to reveal they'd materialized near the vantage point above the first enemy camp. Trumpets were blowing loudly, summoning the host to war. Horsemen galloped around madly, forming up at the edge of the camp, while infantrymen lined up in rows. The scene struck her as organized chaos, with a tiny handful of men trying to get everyone ready before sending them out to do battle. Someone was a quick thinker, she noted. It didn't look as though they were preparing to defend the camp. We've opened a beachhead within their territory, she thought, as she plugged the battery into the valve. And if they can meet us on the beaches and destroy us, they win. The sound of trumpets and shouting grew louder as the enemy army came to life. Emily wondered, morbidly, how many of the men below her had wanted to be there. Probably none. The mercenaries would be leery of picking the wrong side in a continent-wide war, while the draftees would be trying to think of a way to get out without getting caught and hung. Even the leadership cadre might be having second thoughts about joining the war and allying with their former enemies. She hoped the unwilling soldiers had the sense to throw down their weapons and run when the shit hit the fan. No one would blame them for being drafted. It wasn't as if they'd had any choice. She angled the battery, aimed the valve at the command tent, and triggered the spell. A massive fireball, so badly overpowered it would have daunted a necromancer, half wobbled, half flew towards the tent and exploded. A sheet of oily flame crashed across the camp, a string of explosions indicating the fires had washed over barrels of gunpowder. Her heart clenched as she saw a man running, his back on fire. She knew he was screaming, even though she couldn't hear anything over the roar of the flames. The ground shook violently as another gunpowder stockpile exploded. Pieces of debris shot through the air. She ducked quickly as one sailed over her head.
They're coming, Sergeant Miles said.
Emily looked down. Someone on the enemy side had thought quickly, too quickly. The cavalry charged their position, horsemen already unslinging their swords and spears. They were intimidating as hell, even though she knew they'd die like flies if they tried to charge a row of musketmen. She'd watched a horde of charging orcs stopped in their tracks. The cavalry wasn't anywhere near as tough. Sergeant Miles's magic sparked. Emily glanced at him an instant before he unleashed a spell of his own. The cavalry wobbled, then broke as the horses collapsed under them. Emily barely had a moment to realize what the sergeant had done before the spell tore through the mounted men, shattering their bones as easily as it had crippled the horses. She stared in horror as a man disintegrated, his body coming apart into bloody chunks, then grabbed the sergeant's arm. He stared at her, his eyes wide, then nodded. Emily grabbed the other teleport gem and triggered it before he could say a word. The world shifted again. They were suddenly near the farm, watching as more and more troops marched out of the portal. Jade and his sergeants were barking orders, hastily setting up newer defense lines as time ticked away. The dawn sky was lit up by flames, but they knew only one of the army camps had been hit. It wouldn't be long before the remaining commanders reorganized, then charged the portal. They could still win the war.
They had to be stopped, Sergeant Miles said.
His magic was still sparking, flickering bursts of power dancing against the edge of her awareness.
They had to be stopped.
Lady Barb would know what to do, Emily thought helplessly. She wondered if she should stun him, even though she feared she'd need him. Stun him, send him back through the portal. What then? She'd come up with something clever and save the day. She rubbed her forehead as she heard something approaching from the north. It sounded like a machine. For a moment, she wondered if Void had managed to steal a tank or something a little more mundane from an alternate world. It didn't seem likely, but who knew? A car or a truck could be just as deadly if it was pressed into service against musketmen and cannons. Could a car withstand a cannonball? She didn't know. Her heart sank as the black-clad enemy troops crashed through the foliage and came into view. Enhanced troops, not many of them. She thought there were no more than 30, but enough to be deadly. They didn't pause to assess the situation, let alone give the army a chance to prepare itself. They crashed through the cavalry as though they were nothing, tearing men and horses apart with equal abandon. A handful escaped, only because they weren't in the way. Emily shuddered helplessly. The enhanced troops were charging straight for the portal. Jade barked orders. The musketmen raised their weapons and opened fire. The enhanced troops kept charging right into the teeth of their fire.
It looked foolish, almost suicidal, but it wasn't insane. The enhanced troops were tough. Void might have assumed they could soak up the bullets and keep going. He wouldn't have been wrong. A few short months ago. Now, runic bullets crashed into the enhanced troops and tore through them, turning their own magic against them. Emily breathed a sigh of relief as the charge came to a bloody end, the last of the bodies dropping bare inches in front of the trenches. The plan had worked.
"Next time, it won't be so easy," Sergeant Miles said. "He'll know what to expect."
Emily nodded, watching as Jade issued more orders. The bodies were dragged to one side and left for later. There was no point in trying to recover the charmed armor. Once it was broken, the magic was gone. Jan had even speculated it might be designed to only work with enhanced troopers. It certainly needed magic to power the charms. She glanced north. The flames were starting to die away. She could hear more soldiers crashing toward them, hear their commanders screaming orders as they hurled their men forward towards the portal. It had to be their worst nightmare come true, an enemy army that had somehow managed to get very close without being spotted. She looked south, towards Illuvia and Whitehall beyond. Jair and his army of rebels had apparently secured much of the country, according to the reports. Void might not be backing them. She thought she'd dealt with the men he'd used to make the revolution considerably bloodier. But that wouldn't stop them from being a problem. They wouldn't be happy to have a royalist army crossing their lands. Worry about that later, she told herself. Right now, you have other problems. The enemy army crashed into view, a raggedly mass that could still prove immensely dangerous if it managed to punch through to the portal. Emily gritted her teeth as the guns began to boom, cannonballs crashing into the enemy. The cavalry charged, hooves tearing up the ground as they galloped on in a desperate bid to overrun the guns before it was too late. She thought she heard someone cry out in delight as the horsemen ran straight into the musketeers, their formation splintering as bullets tore through their armor. A handful lasted long enough to get into the trenches, only to discover it was even worse down there. The infantry tore them to shreds. Emily turned as the enemy infantry wavered, on the verge of breaking. Officers and sergeants ran up and down the line, barking orders despite incoming fire. She saw an officer fall, a lucky shot taking him out before he could redirect his men. Behind them, archers hurried to take up positions before opening fire on the trenches. Sergeant Miles yanked Emily down as arrows started hissing through the air. The enemy commander was no dummy, she noted as she landed on the muddy ground. His archers could play merry hell with the men marching through the portal. And they're going to make life difficult for the sorcerers, too, Emily noted. The moment one of them stands up, they'll be hit with a dozen arrows. The cannons continued to boom, hurling cannonballs and canister shot towards enemy positions. The archers stood their ground, hurling arrows towards the portal, while the infantry started to build trenches of their own, rapidly digging their way towards Jade's trenches. Emily silently gave them points for thinking quickly. As long as they stayed low, they were relatively safe from the musketmen, and once they broke into the trenches, they'd be able to overwhelm the musketmen before they could escape. Emily cursed under her breath. It was easy to teach men to fire muskets, harder to teach them to use swords and daggers. They simply hadn't had the time. She sensed a surge of magic and looked up. Sienna was holding a battery, pointing the valve towards the incoming troops. A line of fire billowed out of the valve and swept over the trenches, men catching fire before they could drop their weapons and run. Emily recoiled at the stench, her stomach churning as the flames kept advancing south. The archers stopped shooting, ducking low as they beat a hasty retreat. Emily watched Sienna finish draining the battery, then dump the valve on the ground. The battle wasn't over, but it would take the enemy quite some time to regroup.
"Some of their men are running," Sergeant Miles said softly. "They've had enough."
Emily nodded, hoping none of the fleeing men would be shot in the back. It wasn't honorable, according to the laws of war, but they were no longer even guidelines. No one was bothering to give them even lip service, now the commoners had proven they could kill aristocrats and overthrow monarchies. The fleeing men would have to dump their armor and leathers as soon as possible, then pretend to be farmers and refugees as they made their way home. If they were caught by the locals, they'd be lynched. And who could blame them? She joined Jade and the other commanders as he directed more and more men into position, sending cavalry to scout the outer edges of the enemy trenches, while directing musketmen and cannoneers to prepare for the offensive. A line of horse-drawn cannons rumbled past in a bid to expand the beachhead as quickly as possible.
Emily smiled, remembering how the cavalry had howled at seeing their horses reduced to beasts of burden. Behind them, more and more men marched through the portal and took up position. The remaining enemy soldiers didn't make any attempt to slow them down.
"They'll have at least one commander per army back at the camps," Jade commented, as the first of the scouts started to report back. "The problem is, they have the walls at their back. The defenders could sally at any moment."
"King Dator has a relatively modern army," Sergeant Miles agreed, "and Queen Mariah is unlikely to want him to let us do the heavy lifting."
Emily wasn't so sure. Mariah had always struck her as ruthlessly pragmatic. She might prefer to preserve her forces rather than order an attack on an enemy army that was already beaten. It didn't take a tactical genius to know Jade wasn't going to leave the remnants of the army alone. Better to have him do the hard work than expend her forces for nothing. It wouldn't be particularly honorable, but who cared these days? She scowled at the thought. It depended on who was calling the shots in the city and the castle beyond. Queen Mariah, King Dator, or the city councillors and the levelers.
"We shall see," she said.
Jade paced the battlefield, snapping orders as he kept a wary eye on the distant city. The enemy was setting up more and more defenses, hastily digging trenches and cutting down trees to provide a clear field of fire. A sane enemy would be trying to discuss a truce, perhaps even an honorable surrender, rather than prolonging the fight. Emily shuddered, all too aware of the horrors to come. An army that refused to surrender when the battle was clearly lost could be legally slaughtered, and everyone knew it. And yet, the certainty of death would force them to keep fighting long after it was clear they'd lost. Lord Tallinn galloped up to them.
"My lord."
He didn't spare any attention for anyone but Jade.
"The enemy has made no move to surrender."
"Noted."
Jade showed little visible reaction, but Emily knew him well enough to tell that he was disgusted.
"Take a message to the enemy lines. Tell the enemy commander that if he and his men surrender, they'll be treated in accordance with the laws of war."
"My lord."
Lord Tallinn snapped off his salute.
"It will be done."
Emily watched Lord Tallinn gallop off again, her heart sinking. There was nothing to be gained by prolonging the fight, save for bleeding Jade's army white. Void might even have calculated that it didn't matter who won, as long as one army was destroyed and the other was crippled. She wondered grimly just who was in command on the far side. Someone bright enough to know Jade was giving him a lifeline? Someone who feared Jade wouldn't keep his word? Or someone under Void's control? Someone who literally couldn't surrender?
"If they surrender, we'll hold them as prisoners until the end of the war," Jade said, as they made their way towards the front lines.
The landscape had been so badly battered in the last few hours that most of the trees had been knocked down by one side or the other. It would be years before the damage was repaired, even if the fighting stopped immediately.
"If they refuse, they'll refuse," Sergeant Miles predicted. "Even if they trust you, they won't trust the Queen."
Emily feared he was right. Queen Mariah was unlikely to leave known rebels at her back, or, for that matter, to accept they'd been under Void's control. She might wait for Jade to leave, then slaughter the rebellious nobleman. Her eyes tracked Lord Tallinn as he reached the front lines and galloped on, waving a makeshift white flag as he headed to the enemy trenches. They might fire warning shots to turn him back, but Lord Tallinn tumbled to the ground, an arrow sticking out of his chest. Jade swore.
"Send the signal," he ordered.
His voice was as cold as ice.
"Begin the attack."